This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Scott German. And we've got a lot to go into on this UVA sports podcast. First, we'll start with the UVA basketball win on the road out South Carolina. First of two games for our programs, basketball first, football coming up in a few days. And Virginia getting the win, 69-52 was the final. A game that was close for a while. I guess you could say that about most UVA games, though. This is not a good South Carolina team. A couple years ago in the Final Four, but the program's really fallen off the last year and a half or so. But they hung around and made it a game for a while. But UVA then, with a big 17-4 run middle of the second half, Ty Jerome 25 points, Kyle Guy 18 points, Mamadi Diakite 10 points, and then DeAndre Hunter 5 points. So a lot to get into with this one, Scott. First, your impressions. I think as we were chatting right before we got on the air here, it was ugly. It 17-point win on the road against an SEC school, but it felt like sort of an ugly win.
And I think your comment about if it wasn't that long ago, we would be jumping up and down celebrating a win like this. And I think that's true. Because I believe our expectations, the bar has risen so drastically high that we're very critical. We try to critique things a little maybe too much. The bottom line was we went on the road, played a SEC team in their arena, and won the game going away. And I think again, were we perfect? Was it a well-played game? No, by no means. And those things that we know we have a coach on one form of them correct. But, I think the end of the day, you have to take the win, move forward, and try to correct some of the things that we didn't do well tonight. But, I'm at the front center of that line of the spoiled fan base because I'm sitting there texting you and critiquing, oh my gosh, we're just terrible. We couldn't put a ball on the post if we were standing right there on the beat. Those things happen. We also had coming off a 9-8 break, starting rotation different, which we'll get to in just a little bit. I think everyone was shocked at what happened, first substitution off the bench, I believe. Take a deep breath, get a cold drink, get a cold beverage, and you realize we beat a team that was in the Final Four a couple of years ago by 17 points on their home floor after having not played in almost 2 weeks. And I think that kind of calmed everyone down a little bit and say at the end of the day, we're 10-0, coming back home, we got two games to play in the confines of JPJ before we hit the road ACC play. So things are okay for Virginia basketball.
So let's look at the things that went well in this game. First would be the obvious one would be Ty Jerome, 25 points, 9 of 15 shooting, 7 assists, 2 turnovers in 36 minutes. I also had 6 rebounds. I forgot to include that in the story I wrote just and posted a few minutes ago. And he had 13 in a row at one stretch in the first half. He had some big baskets in the second half. Ty was Ty. Kyle Guy was Kyle Guy. 18 points, 5 of 11 from free. No assist, 37 minutes of play. And then Mamadi Diakite, surprise start. He started in place of Kihei Clark, who we'll talk about in a minute. He started, and then the move was to have DeAndre Hunter back in the backcourt instead of playing in the four. Diakite was in the four, and Hunter was back in the three. Diakite had some good numbers, 10 points, 5 of 6 shooting, 22 minutes of playing time. He also did a good job on Chris Silva, the big guy for South Carolina, held him to. He had 11 points, but 4 of 12 shooting and really struggled to get those 11 points. So Jerome, Guy, and Diakite all were solid nights.
Yeah, we keep seeing this backcourt, and it's becoming quite apparent. This is probably the best backcourt in UVA history. Those two guys are just dynamic. I'm a little concerned that we're having a difficult time getting Hunter untracked. Hopefully he's will come around by the ACC play, but our backfoot play has just been phenomenal, and it's sure has pleasure to watch those two guys play at the same time.
I'll go ahead and talk about Hunter. I was going to talk about Clark next, but let's go ahead and talk about Hunter since you brought him up. 23 minutes tonight, and not because of foul trouble. I mean, not necessarily. He had three fouls in the game, so it's not necessarily that the minutes were foul trouble. They may have been ineffectiveness. He was 2 of 10 from the floor, just 3 rebounds. He did have 3 assists. And I mentioned the 3 fouls. But of the 2 of 10, I went back and looked just to make sure. I went to the play-by-play to look at it closely. South Carolina blocked 4 shots. 3 of those shot blocks were on DeAndre Hunter shots. I mean, this is a guy that we're talking about being a potential lottery pick in the 2019 draft if he comes out after his sophomore season. And I don't have the numbers for the Maryland game, but he had a couple of shots blocked there on drives to the hoop. He's taking the ball to the basket. He only went to the foul line once. He was 1 for 1 on the foul line. And that was on a little pop-up jumper from about 12 feet, so not even going to the rim. He's getting shots blocked. He airballed a 3. Technically not an airball. Hit the backboard on the other side after it completely missed the rim. A wide-open 3. And I was also concerned, Scott. I don't know if you noticed this or not. I was tweeting about this all night. In fact, having a little bit of a Twitter argument with a UVA fan who thinks I'm crazy. But maybe I just see things that other people don't see. When South Carolina went zone, Hunter last year in that Duke game, when Duke played zone, the game in Durham, he was just a murderer in that zone. He Virginia positioned him on the foul line, right below the foul line. The ball was he was sort of like a center, the old timey centers who would get the ball and play the pivot, and he'd kick it out to the shooters, or he'd drop it down to Salt or Diakite, or he'd make the little jumper or drive to the basket. He was the key to that win at Duke last year. He was completely clueless tonight in the zone offense. Couldn't get the ball. When he did get, when he finally did get the ball a couple times, he missed a couple jumpers, missed a layup. Really didn't do anything. I mean, it just was surprising to me that a guy that we know has all the talent in the world, just seemed lost out there. That's more concerning to me than that he's missing shots or anything else. He just seems like he's lost out there. Am I crazy? Or, did you see some of those things too?
No, I agree. He doesn't look explosive. He's certainly not jumping like he did last year at the start of the season. Had a couple of shots blocked tonight. Had a couple of shots blocked last Sunday against VCU. The only thing different that I wonder, and I was thinking about doing tonight's game, he's certainly playing himself out of a lot of money because he's 10 games into the season. Now, a lot can happen when the stakes are amped up considerably. We start playing ACC games and the scouts start turning out in droves to watch these kids. So he's got plenty of time to turn things around, but he's certainly, right now, he's not a lottery pick. So I'm wondering if his stamina is something that needs to be questioned, because he's going from playing 18, 19 minutes a game last year to playing about 34, 35 this year. That's the only thing I can think is different. That's different is that he's being asked to play more. So I'm wondering if that could be affecting him, because just looking at all the other factors, that's the only thing that's significantly different.
Yeah, I wonder too. Like tonight, he played at the 3. When you bring Diakite, you have Diakite Salt in the front court. He's playing more of a backcourt role in the Virginia offense and on the defensive end too. The difference between 3 and 4 is you're playing post guys on defense. You're running through screens on offense versus being in the post on offense and fighting down low on defense. And I just wonder if maybe having to play these dual roles is affecting him. In the second half, in the first half when South Carolina played the zone offense was Hunter, go to the foul line and we'll try to get you the ball and do what Isaiah Wilkins did so well for 4 years in the middle of that zone offense. Isaiah doesn't have, maybe a quarter of the athletic ability that Hunter has, but he knew how to play zone offense in that position, in that pivot position. And, Hunter didn't play it very effectively. Second half, Braxton Key was the guy that Tony inserted in that spot at the foul line. And actually, Hunter was just kind of floating around the perimeter. Hunter is not going to be very effective floating around the perimeter. He can make the three-point shot, but he's not a guy you want out there, and that's the only thing he does for you. He's a better three-point shooter when he's, you know, sort of catching it and walking into that shot after penetration. He's not just a guy that, you know, you're going to really rely on to shoot threes over a zone. So, I'm totally flummoxed by that. I'll say something else that threw us both for a loop. We texted about this early in the game. Kihei Clark, we mentioned his name. He played. He played not just play. He played 24 minutes with a cast on his left wrist. He had surgery 9 days ago. What the heck is going on? Scott, I think we agreed on this. This is concerning to me that he's playing 24 minutes 9 days after surgery.
And, you know, I was talking to one of our colleagues today at the signing and press conference, and he remarked that yesterday he saw G.A. Clark, and he had a cast on that looked like he had maybe had really, really major surgery. He had a cast up to his elbow. It was, like, padded, and it just looked awful. And we were talking about maybe that little more extensive surgery than what was reported, and should be maybe he's going to be out for considerably longer. That was the consensus today, this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And then he comes, he dresses, thinking, okay, they just dressed him out just to have him on the bench. And then he's like the first sub in off the bench. I'm thinking, what in the world? Is we talk about risk reward factor. What could possibly be the reward factor about playing him in this game less than 2 weeks after having surgery for a broken wrist? I don't get it. Now, having said all that, I have tremendous faith in the UVA orthopedic folks. They work on me. I'm not a highly talented athlete, but they help me. So I'm certain that they cleared that him to play. But on the other side, why play? What advantage is that for Virginia by having Kihei play in this game tonight? I'm at a loss to rationalize him.
I'm at a loss to rationalize as well. And actually, then you look at the numbers. I'm not just looking at the counting stats, as we call them. He had 2 points, 1 of 4 shooting, 2 assists in 24 minutes. Didn't turn the ball over. But because his value is never what the counting stats show you. It's what he does on defense, etc. But the one that Scott and I love the most, and if you listen to this podcast regularly enough, you know that we talk about the plus-minus stat. That's simply a reflection of the score of the game when you're on the floor. His plus-minus today was just +1. And what I noticed was, I mean, you know, without going play-by-play through some of the issues, yeah, he's not able to play defense the way he can because, you know, he's got this big claw on his hand. And now he was able to ball handle well, but, yeah, he wasn't the same today. Actually, Braxton Key, though, also was just a +1 on the plus-minus. The plus-minus leaders were Ty Jerome +20. Kyle got +18, Salt was a +18, Hunter was a +16, and Diakite a +11. So, and Anthony actually, Marco Anthony did get 2 minutes in the game in the first half, didn't get back off the bench in the second half, and he was a zero. So Clark wasn't as effective, so he's not as effective, and what are you doing? You know, if he falls down again, takes another charge, and has to brace himself with his wrist, he might be out for the season. And you're in December on the road against South Carolina. These aren't the most important games right now. So what that says to me, Scott, and this is the thing that makes me a little worried, is that Tony thinks we can't win without everybody on the floor, and it's only December. What happens when we get to March? That's what the playing of Clark 24 minutes tonight worries me about the rest of the season, just in terms of what Tony thinks about this roster and maybe how limited he thinks it is. As opposed to how deep we thought we were just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's the only thing. And, you know, I thought, well, maybe he'd shake off the cobwebs. Look, there's no cobwebs to shake off. He played their last game. Yeah. The entire team would have cobwebs to shake off. And you know, again, this is what's fun about being a fan, because we can sit here and talk all we want and second-guess Coach Bennett. We're not. I mean, we're both at the president, vice president of the Tony Bennett fan club. We're not, I know we don't have any ballot in this about questioning what Coach Bennett does. But we should know by now that to play him, even if it came down to, well, we need him to win this game. Well, we didn't need to win this game because we, Virginia more than anyone, should know it doesn't really matter what your record is during the regular season. It's where you are at the end of the season, where you are when postseason begins. We found that out the very hard way last year. And for him to come back 9 days later, I know there's people on the list and say, well, you guys, you're not doctors. You're not, you've never had that type of injury. And that's true on both counts. But I just don't see any advantage of him playing. And looking back, I was like, he wasn't affected by it.
Yeah, I don't need to be a doctor to see a big cast on his left wrist and that he was not affected tonight. It's more a basketball thing than a health thing. I'm not concerned. I'm not raising any concern about Tony Bennett playing a guy who shouldn't be playing because he's hurt. It's more about playing a guy who's not going to be effective, and I'm not sure Clark was very effective tonight. So the concern I've got is that maybe the roster isn't as good as we thought it was if you have to rush Kihei Clark back and play him 24 minutes in this relatively meaningless game. And, you know, and there will be fans out there, oh, every game is meaningful. Well, yeah, and the more meaningful ones come up, and still about 3 months away. So that's the ones we need to be focused on. And you want everybody healthy for those games. And I think that, you know, I'm worried about that. I'm just worried about that. Let's shift gears. Talk about how big.
Well, we saw, you know, tonight was a pretty good. Marco Anthony came in. He stayed quite 2 minutes. I know he had, I think he had at least one turnover, and he had another one that just was a bad sloppy pass that luckily got distracted by a South Carolina defender and went out of bounds, and it didn't result in a turnover. But Marco Anthony certainly didn't get any playing time tonight. He pulled and never came back. So, you know, it's pretty obvious that our depth right now is a question. I did listen to some of the games at the same time as I was watching. And when Clark came in, Dave Kane made Jimmy Miller, the analyst, and Kane were really surprised. I guess at that point they weren't surprised that he was going to play, but they made a comment that D.A. Clark was a real gamer, and that's why he's playing. Again, that to me as a coach would be, that's not one, because you know, being the gamer, how many times have we gone out and played pickup basketball and sprained ankles, or we had a bad head cold, or we just didn't do it? But we want to play. Now, that's what players do. But, and I'm sure T.A. wanted to play. There's no way he gets on the floor. Maybe if he's healthy, if he's feeling like it may be Saturday against William & Mary, I'm probably keeping him shut down until the start of ACC play.
Yeah, well, yeah, I, me too. I mean, at least, say, William & Mary is Saturday, and then there's another break 9 days in between that game and UVA's final non-conference game, December 31st against Marshall, which actually should be a good game. Marshall made the tournament last year, won 27 games last year. We're not the coach, but we're just saying, you know, whether or not, we got to do our jobs here and tell you that we're concerned. And not about Clark playing and risking his health. It's more to me about, boy, if he's the only other guy we got, there's supposedly a lot of blue chippers sitting on that bench that haven't earned playing time, apparently. And that's concerning to me the most. So let's shift gears. Scott, you talked about how you were at the signing day press conference. They also some talk there with Coach Mendenhall, not only about the 20 signees that came in today. What a busy first signing day, a lot busier than last year's first signing day, across the country and in Virginia, but also talking about the Belk Bowl. Let's start with the signings. This class, boy, it's ranked well. The Rivals has the class 32nd in the nation, 5th in the ECC. And by far, Bronco Mendenhall's best recruiting class, not only at Virginia, but in his coaching career. At BYU, he never really was higher than the low 50s nationally in his time at BYU. Won 99 games in 11 years out there with those recruiting classes. So his first couple at Virginia were in the 50s, 60s range. and now a 32nd rated recruiting class, fifth in the ACC, three four-star players. I'm sure the mood today, I would assume at least, that the mood today over at John Paul Jones Arena for the press conference was pretty exultory.
Well, it was, and Coach Mendenhall was, you could tell it, he was extremely pleased with the recruiting. 19 signees, and I think they got a late one tonight. A kid that had flipped from a Temple commitment, three-star player, so he may be up to 20 by now. And a solid class. And, you know, if you look at where this program was, where we have come from in his time at UVA, I would say if you're going to grade this recruiting on a curve, if you base it on where we were, then I'd give this recruiting class an A. Just based on what Mendenhall was working with when he first took over 3 years ago. And he basically said they recruited on a need basis, where they went out and recruited players to fill slots that they needed. He talked about his quarterback recruiting philosophy, in that they were going to recruit a quarterback every year because they felt like he needed that in the pipeline to make that natural progression. And that he related to having Perkins and the quarterback that they're bringing in was from a footprint of what Bryce has laid out his 1 year at UVA. Talking about how the recession there with Perkins and Armstrong and moving down to Lindell. Was it Lindell? The unofficial third string quarterback. So, you know, a neat base, and he was very, very pleased with it. You know, one thing, there wasn't a lot of media there. I think a lot of the media was maybe down in Columbia Cup, the basketball game tonight. So there wasn't a lot of questions, and it went pretty quick. I was told that it would probably go about an hour, but it ended up being 25 to 30 minutes. And afterwards, he was just kind of standing around, and neither one of us are normally not ones to ask a lot of questions during the press conferences, but I had an opportunity to go over and ask a question that was not asked during the conference, and he went out of his way to tell me how he was surprised that wasn't a question that was brought up, and he was glad that it was asked. And then my question to him was, Coach, you know, you had a good recruiting class. How is your message being received now? How does that compare to your message that you first used on a recruiting trail? And is it different now? The message, has it changed, you know, that you've had a couple of years under your belt? And he took a great deal of time with the one-on-one to explain that this is the first time in his tenure at UVA that he really thinks he's being warmly received in potential recruiting, potential players' homes, by his family, by the cousins, by the brothers, and that he attributed that to success, and that success lends itself to success. Success that they're having on the field, and going from 2 wins to 6 wins, 6 wins to 7, and you and I both know that 7 could have just as easily been 9. I don't buy into that. Well, it could have been 9. I buy into the Bill Parcells theory that you are what your record says you are, and what our record says we are right now is 7 wins. But we also know we kind of get wrapped 2 of those at the end of the season. Could have had 9 wins. He said that the message is being warmly received, and that the biggest shift in their recruiting philosophy is now they're learning to utilize their resources better, and they know how to better look for fits to the school. And they're not wasting their time and their efforts recruiting kids that aren't going to be that good fit. He went on to praise Claude Williams for adding some staff. They now have a recruiting staff that does nothing but basically does analytical recruiting. And it brings these recruits, potential recruits, so that the coaches can spend more time coaching, less time out hunting down, for recruits. So he was very upbeat. And I'm glad I went today because I saw a different side of Virginia football. The business side is getting the property, they're getting the building blocks. And you know what? I'm impressed. I think he has a solid plan in place.
You know, I'm noting while you're talking there, I was just doing some math in my head about, because for some people this will be important, and I would wonder if this came up during the press conference. I've got a transcript of the press conference, haven't read through it yet, so I'll ask you this question first, Scott, before I've even read through the transcript, because they didn't send it until literally about 20 minutes into the basketball game, so I haven't had a chance to review all this yet. But four of the recruits signed today of the 20 are from the state of Virginia. Five are from Florida. Now, for some folks, they'd say, gosh, you got to recruit your home state. You got to get the kids from the 757. That's all we heard from Mike London for all those years. You got to recruit the 757. You got to recruit Richmond. Four kids from Virginia. Now, there was one from D.C., so maybe we can count that. We'll say five from Virginia to count D.C. But five from Florida. I see Texas. I see Georgia. I see Louisiana. You know, I see. So it's a national profile. Of course, maybe the highest profile recruits from Cincinnati, Ohio, Juwan Briggs, the four-star defensive tackle, the second-best defensive tackle in the country, who is going to play in the All-Star game coming up that we wrote about this week. So was that a question? And what is your sense? How important is that you have more numbers from the state of Virginia?
Well, being sort of an old man on the block, I used to think that if you couldn't recruit the state, then you stood no chance of winning. But I think the way the recruiting is done now, the technology that we have of being able to scout players anywhere in the country, the digital technology, looking at players' highlights, I don't think it's as critical that you recruit the state. And Virginia is such a national university, Chris, far better than I did. You're going out, and if you're going out to the West Coast to recruit players, you're not recruiting players to an unknown commodity. You're recruiting players to the University of Virginia, perhaps the top-rated public university in America. Certainly the Stanford of the East Coast. So I don't think it's quite as important. And if you listen to the response that Coach Lindenhall gave me, Shane was plugged for Augusta Free Press, but it wasn't asked in the press conference. Not every recruit is a fit for the university. And that's not to say if the top-rated quarterback in high school wanted to play at UVA, that UVA would find a way to get him in. I don't particularly think I think that would probably happen, but I think that the coaching staff now knows that not every player is a fit, either academically or just their values or whether they align with Coach Mendenhall's values. So, and if you have the rest of the country at your doorstep to recruit, then why not? And they went down to Florida, and they got some good players out of the state of Florida. Again, the numbers. I mean, there's so many more potential players in the state of Florida. They should all go to Florida State, Florida, Miami. A lot of them want to leave the state. A lot of them want to get out, want to see different parts of the country, and want to get a great education. So I'm not the old school in me says if you can't go down to the 757 and take your pick and select whomever you want, and you're not recruited, you're not going to be successful. I think that's a mentality now that passes. And you look at the footprint of where he recruited this year, and you're right, his best player came out of Ohio. So I think it's important to recruit the state, but I don't think it's as important that you have that stranglehold on certain geographic regions of the state.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers, just looking at Rivals numbers as we were talking here. I looked at the top 25 players in Virginia on the Rivals board, and two Virginia signees among those. Ben Smiley was the top rated. He's the number 12 player in Virginia. Is that right, number 12? Where did I have him? Actually, Smiley's 16th best player in Virginia, and then the 25th best player, Chase Chalmers. And then, boy, Virginia Tech had six. Penn State had three. West Virginia had two. So, but, you know, I guess it kind of makes me think, and maybe this is part of the reasoning for bringing someone in from the outside, like Bronco Mendenhall, when, you know, Craig Littlepage, you know, brought him in a few years ago, is get, you know, just kind of start from scratch. Mike London recruited Virginia really well, and he had great recruiting classes. He had three straight top 30 recruiting classes, 2011, 2012, 2013. They didn't win, and he recruited Virginia almost, you know, almost universally. He was dominating Virginia and not winning games. And so, you know, maybe you just tear those plans up, start over from scratch. And wherever the kids come from, you just want the best kids. And, of course, Bronco's got a system too. We've said this a lot for our listeners out there. You're hearing us say the same thing over and over to some degree. But we still can't figure out what Mike London was trying to do, defensively, offensively, anything. He just never had systems in place. Bronco has got a system. His offense with Robert and I, the offense is a spread offense with a dual threat quarterback, big wide receivers. You look at the recruits on this list here. You've got a 6'5 receiver, a 6'4 receiver, another 6'3 receiver. These are the receivers that he wants. Olamide Zaccheaus this year put big numbers up at 5'8, but he wants big guys. So he wants a big quarterback who can run, who can pass. He wants big receivers. He wants running back. And then on defense, he wants speed. And you look at where his priority this year again was on defense. He got a defensive tackle to plug the middle up, and then there's a lot of linebackers and cornerbacks and safeties on this signee sheet. So, yeah, you see the philosophy coming through, and he's recruiting to his philosophy. And if you can't find those kids in Virginia, you just go find them. And obviously that's what they did. They were able to find a lot of good players out there.
Yeah, and, you know, we beat this horse to death and bring it back and beat it again. But talking about Mike London, Mike was a great guy. But let's face it, Mike had no plan. He had no blueprint. You can see the blueprint that Mendenhall has. It's very clear. He talked about speed on offense. He also said the reason you recruit speed on defense. Talked about, you mentioned recruiting speed to the defensive side of the ball. He also said speed on the offensive side of the ball usually meant scoring a lot of points. And I agree with that too. You got to have it on both sides of the ball. I thought the press conference today was spectacular. Today I officially I've come off the fence a little bit. I'm fully bought into that. You know, he was very articulate. He answered each question instead of just rambling out some mundane, you know, fill in the blank type responses. He had a direct answer to every question. He almost single-handedly went down the list of players, talked about seeing them play in person, talked about the fit, again, the fit with the university. I think there's a lot of, he went out of his way to praise Carl Williams for investing in the infrastructure of the program. He explained how much, to what benefit having these recruiting coordinators were, that they do nothing but coordinate recruiting efforts. They don't coach. They're not coaches. They're analytical people. And what they do is they free the coaches up so much time to just coach and evaluate and help players become better players. He has a plan, and I like that. I really do. It's so much different than what we had gotten used to seeing with the previous coach.
So let's talk some Belk Bowl real quick as we wrap things up. I know there's one bit of news. Assis Dubois on the injury reports as we're going through the bowl practice season. I think the word is, as of now, that we don't know his availability for the Belk Bowl. But I know that was one bit of news from today's presser about the Belk Bowl.
Yeah, that was brought up in the second half of the news conference. They focused on the Belk Bowl, and he mentioned that DeVon was hurt in practice today. And he went into he did not elaborate. He basically said didn't know the extent of the injury, but we get more details later today, so we don't know, you know, whether it was a sprained ankle or what. But that's a player we need help. We need he compared. The question was asked, was there a comparison to any of our opponents that we played this year? And he compared South Carolina to NC State both offensively and defensively. He said they ran a lot of the same schemes offensively, defensively. And we played NC State early in the season. We had chances in that game. I don't think that was a nail-biter, but we certainly had chances to win the NC State game. So, State gives up a lot of points. They've got a dynamic offense, but he also alluded, and this is something that I really thought was important. He didn't refer back much to the Military Bowl, but it was almost like, okay, I think last year our guys were just so excited to be going to the bowl. Now this year it's time to win. And that is important. You move forward, you come away from a win in that game. We talk about it being an exhibition game. I don't think it's an exhibition game. I think anytime you put on your uniform, you're playing someone other than yourself in the spring game. That's not an exhibition game. Jesus is going to be 7-6 at the end of the season, or they're going to be 8-5, and an 8-win season is just going to help momentum, keep this momentum going to next season. It's also going to help them fundraising. You know, they're embarking on a journey to raise millions and millions of dollars to help improve the infrastructure of the football support facility. So this is a huge, very important football game for the school.
Oh, I got to do some business here now. We're talking Belk Bowl on a podcast, so I've got to do a live read, actually two live reads. Augusta Free Press coverage of the 2018 Belk Bowl was presented by Bear Creek. Bear Creek Building Community, it's wintertime, but spring will be here before you know it. Imagine gathering with friends and family for that first barbecue on your new deck. Bear Creek builds custom backyard structures that bring people together. Get started now at bearcreek.co. And one other sponsor, AFB's coverage also sponsored by Studio 3.6 on East Market Street in Charlottesville, where hair dreams come true over Leah Sampson. Yes, that last name should be familiar. Her father is Ralph Sampson. Brings her passion for people, hair, and creativity to the salon. Mention this ad for $10 off salon services of $50 or more. Book your appointment online at studiosalon36.com. So there's Scott. I just did some business. That's probably making you happy, too, because you sell the ads for us here. So, we're going to be at the Belk Bowl in just a few days, 10 days from now. And we thank Bear Creek and Studio 36 for their support of our coverage.
Absolutely. And I've already contacted one of our sponsors, Bear Creek, because I need some yard work done. I need a patio built. And you know what? I'm going to give them a first shot at it. So there are tangible benefits for this.
That's right. You know, and I've known Brian Menninger, the owner of Bear Creek, co-owner of Bear Creek, for a long time, and he'll do a good job. So hey, you know, look at that. He's already getting some benefit out of that sponsorship. And so listeners out there, bearcreek.co, and then also studiosalon36.com, and we can point you guys in good directions for both there. And Scott, let's see, we've talked Belk Bowl, we've talked football recruiting, we've talked basketball. This is among our more densely packed podcast of the last few months. So anything else on your mind as we wrap things up?
Looking forward to going back to JPJ Saturday, in-state game against William and Mary, and then Christmas. So this is a fun time of year. We got a bowl game to look forward to. Man, I tell you what, Santa Claus has been really good to me, Chris.
For our listeners out there, as we wrap up, you can go to our website. I've got my game story from the UVA South Carolina basketball game tonight. Also, coverage of signing day. And we'll have previews of UVA Women Mary. We'll have live blog and game coverage there as well. Scott and I will do a Facebook Live after that game, since we'll be together at JPJ. A lot coming up, as Scott mentioned. It feels like Christmas now, and it feels good to be back after that exam break. For Scott German, I'm Chris Graham, signing off. Wahoo wah.